Blog Talk Radio.
The Triangle Offense.
Reach out, boys. We're going in.
Am I hallucinating here? Just what in the hell do you think you're doing?
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It jumped up a notch.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah.
At last, we meet for the first time, for the last time.
Are you not?
And welcome to the Triangle Offense. I am your host and moderator, Matthew Long, here with my esteemed co-host and panelists here on the Triangle Offense. From left to right is Ryan the Kane Harris. We got Ricky Check, a.k.a. Ricky Bobby. And over here to my right, we have Brandon Beto, a.k.a. YOLO. We're going to get this thing, we're going to break this thing down like this. In case you haven't heard the show before, the way it works is I go over a series of topics and questions with our wonderful panelists here, and depending on how they answer, they will get points. The one at the end of the show that has the most points will be named the winner and will hold the belt for that week. Now, without further ado,
let's rock this joint!
Okay, the first topic we're going to get into tonight is Timothy Tebow got signed by the Hoodie. The New England Patriots signed him on Monday to a two-year deal at league minimum. And he's going to be with them for the next couple years if he makes the cut. So that is contingent there. So let's start off like this. Good move, bad move. I'm starting it off every week now with the champion. And the champion is Ryan Harris.
Here we go.
A.K.A. the Kane. A.K.A. Ben Grimm.
Clobbering time.
Let's do it. So what's up? Good move, bad move?
I don't know. Who knows? What's he going to play? He was signed to a two-year contract, right? No guaranteed money. He's going in behind Brady. He's going in behind Mallett to be the third quarterback, right? He's been working with Chris Winkie.
Is that a benefit in any?
I don't think it is.
Chris Winkie?
But he wouldn't have that spot teaching quarterbacks if he didn't know what he was talking about. Now, you can know what you're talking about and not be able to do it. But
he's a former Heisman.
He is a former Heisman. This is why I think they brought Tebow in. I think they brought him in for short yardage situations only. All right, if you look back at last year's stats, last year on...
Did he accumulate enough plays to make his stats even significant enough to call them statistics?
I think he's talking about the Patriots. You're talking about the Patriots?
Yes, I'm talking about the Patriots.
Oh, you're talking about... Yeah,
he's talking about the Patriots. Patriots short run.
Okay. There are two I thought you were talking about Tebow last year with the Jets.
No, this is why I think they brought him in. The Patriots, why they brought Tim Tebow in this year.
Okay.
Last year, their rushing ranks for 3 yards or less for a first down. They ranked second at rushing percentage at 67%. All right? So they ran the ball almost 75% of the time at... third down or three or less.
So, fantasy listeners, and pick up some running backs from the Patriots. Okay, keep going.
Their yards per rush were ranked 20th at 2.9. First down percentage, 65%. Okay? What he excels in is short yardage running. So far in his career as an NFL quarterback, when he runs the ball, he'll get you 3 yards. I don't think he's going to be coming in to play quarterback. There's no way. He may come in and run a wildcat package, but even when he played with the Jets, he wasn't very successful when they brought him in. I think Bill Belichick is one of the coaches that can kind of ease the media hype with Tim Tebow. Last year, it was ridiculous because everyone knows Rex Ryan loves the media attention for his football team. Bill Belichick, on the other hand, does not. He's very short. When he answers questions, it's
short-winded.
Yeah. He was asked what position Tebow will play. His answer is easily, we will see. That tells me that it's not going to be quarterback. I wish that Tim Tebow would change positions. I love Tim Tebow as a football player. I love Tim Tebow as a person. I don't love him as a quarterback. I don't think the problem is his arm. I think the problem is with his feet. He's also been working with Vinny Testaverde here in Tampa at Jesuit High School. And Vinny said that he's been working on his feet, and he thinks he's corrected the problem. I don't think it's going to work as a quarterback for Tim Tebow in the NFL. I think Tim Tebow will be successful as an H-back type player, fullback, full-fledged tight end.
Okay, so pretty much he's going to move to an H-back, tight end, situational type of person, basically, right?
I think the Patriots will put him in a position that will give him the ball in a short yardage situation because, look, this kid is a football player. He's tough-nosed. He works hard. He plays the game the correct way. He is a fan favorite. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think he will be successful if he's open-minded to what Bill Belichick wants him to do. Because Bill Belichick's known for taking those types of players that are so-called outcasts from other teams. I don't think he's an outcast, but he's a player that is not playing the correct position.
Yeah.
And Bill Belichick will put a wide receiver as a DB at any moment.
That's a good point. Let me go to the second runner-up 2 weeks in a row. The undisputed, undefeated second place. I can't quite get over the hump. Brandon Yolo Beto.
Thank you for the great introduction. I think it's a smart move. Bill Belichick, like Ryan previously stated, was that he turns around players that you think are worthless or that are, you know, over the hump in their career. Look at Randy Moss. Randy Moss was supposed to be done for and didn't want to play football anymore, and then he goes there and Tom Brady turns him into a Hall of Fame record-setting wide receiver. Bill Belichick has this ability to get through to players and to get exactly what he wants out of those players. I think it's a really, really smart move. It's a really, really cheap move. Not only is there no guarantees in his money, there's no incentives. So if Tim Tebow goes out there and throws 20 touchdowns because Tom Brady breaks his leg in the game, it doesn't matter what he does. He can't make any more money than the league minimum because there's just nothing in his contract that says, hey, here's a possibility of you making more money. So I think it was a cheap move. The fans that are going to come to the game, you're going to gain that Tebow mania crowd. So from a business standpoint, it's a really, really smart move because not only is he going to bring people to the game, but he's going to sell jerseys. Your brand is now mixed with the Tebow mania that is out there. And although it can be a huge problem, Bill Belichick, like Ryan also previously stated, is very good with keeping the media out of his locker room and out of his football team. He's good at saying, hey, media, this is my football team. You know, this is what I'm going to do. So I think the New York circus that went on last year, there's no way that gets through with Bill and the Patriots. It doesn't happen. As far as what he's going to play whatever he gets told to play. I don't think they brought him to play quarterback because, let's be honest, they have the second best quarterback in the league, maybe arguably the first. And you're not going to see Tim Tebow at the quarterback unless something has gone horribly wrong with the Patriots. Unless a wildcat or some scat
some
formation.
Ridiculous
that,
play
yeah,
that
which
drawing Bill, up just for him.
Bill Belichick is offensively a genius. He turns Danny Woodhead into a running back that people consider good, and the kid's like 5'5", a buck 10.
The kid was awesome coming out of college. He was a Division II. Basically, he was a Heisman two years
D3,
in a row.
I think he was
Division
D3. Are you sure on that?
Yes. Shadron State.
All right.
It's in Western Nebraska. Come on, man.
Danny Woodhead also got released by the Jets in minicamp.
Well, that was another big thing. Say, hey, I'm going to take your scrap and I'm going to beat you with it. I'm going to score a touchdown. I'm going to have him scamper for a 40-yard touchdown in the Jets game. But nonetheless, I think it's a really smart move. I think the Patriots know what they're doing. What I was curious to was is Bill Belichick earlier in the offseason said, I hate Tim Tebow as a quarterback.
Yeah, we're going to get into that here in just a second.
And now he's on the Patriots. So I'm curious to see if that's ever brought up and how he handles it.
And I like your point, the business move point. I think that was a good point to make. Ricky Bobby, what do you think?
Well, Brandon, you mentioned Bill Belichick does not like him as a football player.
The hoodie.
But he likes him as a person. Does that not fit the New England Patriots style right there? Can he not fix you as a football player? But if you're a great person and not a cancer in the locker room, that's what he's looking for. He wants great people as far as inside of the locker room. Now, just real quick, he may not be a solid quarterback right now, but the tools are there. As a college quarterback, and I'll preface this by saying a college quarterback, I understand he didn't get a whole lot as far as, you know, time in the pros, but collegiately, two-time BCS champion, two-time first-team All-American, 2007 Heisman Trophy winner, 2008, and I stress, SEC Offensive Player of the Year. SEC is known for their defense, strong, hard-nosed grit defense. He came out as an Offensive Player of the Year. The tools are there. And as far as Tim Tebow going to signing with the Patriots, Belichick sees that in him. He sees the quarterback inside of him. Look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady wasn't even a starter. He was a backup to Drew Henson, who I think tried to become a third baseman for the New York Yankees, so that obviously didn't work out too well. Tom Brady learned under a veteran like Drew Bledsoe, came in when his time came up, and he led them to the Super Bowl. And he's led a dynasty ever since. Tom Brady's 35 years old right now. He will be 36 when the next season starts. Tom Brady will have Tim Tebow behind him for 2 years. Tebow will learn under Brady, learn under Belichick for 2 years. The money's not guaranteed. That's what the two-year thing screams to me. It's a two-year project. We're going to give this 2 years. If it doesn't work by then, hey, cut our losses. You know, league minimum. There's not really a whole lot risk in there for Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots on the business standpoint. He's going to get you the fan base. New England Patriot fans are going berserk that they have Tim Tebow on their team. Are they going to want him to play? No, they got Tom Brady. That was one of the two teams I thought Tim Tebow could go to, and they would be able to control the Tebow mania, would be New England, and it'd be Green Bay.
So, it kind of sounds like you're stacking Tebow ahead of Ryan Mallett at quarterback.
I am, because I read you off his collegiate. Now, when he had time as an NFL pro, all right, in 2011, he had 11 starts.
He was drafted, though.
Right.
That's all that matters. What happened after that?
Right, in 2011. He wasn't drafted in 2011.
Let's talk about 2012.
I'm talking about 2011 forward. When he got a chance to play.
What do you do with the Broncos? What do you do with the
right,
Jets?
Right, this is with Denver. 2011, okay. With Denver. He had 11 starts. He went 7-4. He completed less than 50%, but he still threw for almost 1,800 yards. 12 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, but he ran for 660, so you combine that, that's 2,500 yards.
All purpose.
Plus another 6 more touchdowns on the ground. The same year, during the playoffs, he had 2 starts.
18 touchdowns.
Obviously, he won one and lost one. He threw for 452 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown, and 0 interceptions. So, given the opportunity, the man's going to work his ass off for you. He's going to do whatever it takes to get better. He's obviously proven that, like Ryan said. He's working with Testaverde. He's working with Chris Winkie. He's doing what he can to become a better NFL quarterback.
B-Wow has a retort to that.
Tim Tebow, the one thing you can say about Tim Tebow is that he's a winner. He's won literally wherever he has gone. He won in high school. He won in college. He has won when he got the starting chance with the Broncos. With all that being said, he's not ahead of Ryan Mallett. Ryan Mallett is a better, fundamentally speaking,
I agree there.
Quarterback.
He fits their offense better.
Ryan Mallett is that pocket passer. He's big. He's tall. He's strong. He can do all that kind of stuff. And I think that Tim Tebow's battling maybe for the backup quarterback, but I don't necessarily think that it's just about the quarterback. I think Bill Belichick is an offensive genius and is going to find a way to use Tim Tebow in not only ways that he can succeed, but in ways that the other team doesn't expect.
If in 4 or 5 years, when Brady retires, because I think he'll play well into his 40s, just like Warner did, if Tim Tebow is still there, he might be the new quarterback for the Patriots. Because I don't see Mallett sitting behind him that long, because they'll trade him before that.
You might have Aaron Rodgers on your hand. There's not a better quarterback.
He almost cried when he did.
Yeah, there's not.
I would have too.
There's not a better quarterback cerebrally outside of Tom Brady besides Peyton Manning. Cerebrally, he's an assassin.
Look, Tebow is not going to play quarterback for the New England Patriots. I guarantee
that.
It. Look,
I second that. Unless something has gone wrong.
Rob Gronkowski, he's out for he's just going under his 4th surgery.
I think it's 5th now.
Broken arm. And he also faces back surgery,
yeah,
which would make a 5th. So now they have a hole at tight end to fill. Who better than to Tim Tebow to get him into these OTAs?
Don't forget Aaron Hernandez. Aaron Hernandez is still out in New England.
But you need more than one tight end. And that's my point. You can fill a void with Tim Tebow at tight end if you have the enough time to teach him this position. A lot of people change positions and go to tight end. A lot of people do. A lot of basketball players move to tight end and become successful. Why can't Tim Tebow? And I think with Belichick not coming out and saying that, yes, he'll be playing quarterback, rather him saying, we'll see what position he plays. I guarantee it's some sort of tight end position to fill this void.
So now, again, you're talking about Tim Tebow, who is a quarterback, who has experience playing quarterback. Now you want him to move to a different position in tight end and, using your words, teach him the position. Why not teach him how to play quarterback?
They've tried.
The Patriots have not tried.
How many other teams have tried and failed?
Not the Patriots. Patriots are a whole different type of beast.
Look,
here.
The Jets tried it. Well, kind of tried.
You're comparing Rex Ryan and Bill Belichick.
But look who
right
he's
now.
Going back to, Josh McDaniels, who was the coach at the Broncos. It's
right.
The same coach.
Right, and
same
he succeeded.
Yeah.
He succeeded under those circumstances, under his plan.
Well, you
now you have Bill Belichick's mind and know-how about the game to add that into an offense that he succeeded in. Match
but
also,
Belichick is not dumb enough
to start
Tim Tebow
over Tom Brady. That's not happening.
I'm not saying he's starting over Tom Brady. I'm saying that he's capable of being an NFL quarterback.
I think it's what Ricky said earlier, too. It's a grooming process. In 2 years, if he looks better, if he practices better, I mean, that's all you heard out of the Jets camp was he's not starting because he sucks in practice. And I'm a Tim Tebow fan, but if you can't practice well, or if you look like crap when you practice, I can't put you into a game. My hands are tied behind my back.
There's a reason why New England is the only NFL team to offer this kid a contract. There's a reason for it.
It's a project.
It's a definite project. He will not come in and play quarterback.
And we're going to get on to our next topic. Our next topic will be heading into some NBA playoffs. It's heating up. It's getting nice and juicy in the NBA. But we're first going to pay some... we're going to pay some bills and get right back to you. And you're listening to the Triangle Offense on WCSB Sports.
Sports radio host, producer, news anchor. A few of many, many more careers that the Connecticut School of Broadcasting can lead you to. Go CSB.com or 1-800-TV-RADIO to schedule your studio tour. With an on-hands approach and instructors being broadcast professionals themselves, you're guaranteed to get a first-class learning experience. Get your career in the broadcasting field started the right way. Sports radio host, producer, news anchor, the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. Go CSB.com or 1-800-TV-RADIO to schedule your studio tour.
Ladies and gentlemen...
Okay, yeah, we're going to get now into some NBA Finals talk here. We made predictions last week, and I'm going to go over all the predictions real quick. Ryan the Champ Harris is the new nickname for a week, at least. He picks the Heat in 6, B-Wow, Heat in 6, Ricky Bobby, Spurs in 5, and then I picked Spurs in 7. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start off with Brandon here. All right, Brandon, you picked Heat in 6. Are you confident with that, or do you want to stick with it, or
I might switch to Heat in 7, but either way I'm going to take Heat in 6 or 7.
What's the change of heart about?
San Antonio just looks tougher. I thought they would be a little older. I thought the Heat would be able to run out a little more, but as long as San Antonio doesn't turn over the ball a lot, it seems like they can force them to play that half-court game, which the Heat aren't as good as. But either way, the key factor is obviously LeBron James. LeBron James has to dominate on both sides of the court. He doesn't have to necessarily fill up the bucket. As y'all saw in Game 2, he only had like 17 points, and they won on just running away. But LeBron defensively is almost more important. Because defensively, he has to contain whoever he's on, whether it's Tony Parker, because I believe the beginning of the game he was on Tony Parker in Game 2, or whether it's Manu Ginobili and keeping him from filling up the bucket behind the arc. But the key is definitely defensively for the Heat. If they do what they did in Game 2, which is force San Antonio into turning the ball over and getting out and running, you can't play with them like that. If they get turnovers, they are going to run you out of the gym every single time. And that was the big difference between Game 1 and 2, was that the Heat forced like 17 turnovers in Game 2, where they only forced like 4 in Game 1, and that was the drastic change.
Mm-hmm.
And that made for the, I think it was a 33-5 run. But either way, LeBron James would be the key factor, and I think the X factor is Chris Bosh. I think he has to hit his open shots when he gets them. Stop shooting threes for the love of God. Get back into that 15 to 18 foot baseline shot that he almost always hits. And then he has to be able to get inside, not necessarily be tough because that's not Chris Bosh's game, but you have to be able to grab the rebounds. You have to be able to box out. You have to do the correct things so that you're not giving up 16, 17, 18 second chance points in a game, because that's what's going to kill Miami. That's what killed him in the Indiana series.
I think you're asking Chris Bosh to do something that he can't do against this
team. He can rebound. In five games.
Rebound.
Yeah, in five games during the regular season, the last five times they played.
Who?
San Antonio and the Heat. The last five times they played,
I mean, you didn't have half the team there.
No, the last five times that they've played, Chris Bosh has outscored and out-rebounded Tim Duncan in four of those five. So he can do it, because Tim Duncan isn't a powerhouse. Tim Duncan doesn't go in the post and beat you down like a Dwight Howard would or like a Roy Hibbert would. Tim Duncan's older. He relies on that bank shot. He relies on finesse. He relies on technique. That's why he calls him big fundamental, more than just straight power. He's not going to bulldoze you over.
Ricky Bobby?
Well, I had San Antonio in five. I was just kind of more or less going out on a limb there, just trying to stretch it out, throw something a little different. I'm tired of the whole Heat in six, Heat in seven, Spurs in six. I wanted to get something different out there. I like San Antonio a lot for the same reason that I liked Indiana to actually beat Miami. Was my mistake here. San Antonio is a much more experienced Indiana-style team. So more or less, Indiana more mirrored San Antonio as opposed to the other way around. That was my mistake. Obviously, Miami took out Indiana, no problem. However, San Antonio is kind of that next level up. Same style. Like he mentioned, Tim Duncan, you know, he's not going to power you through. But what I've noticed, at least in the first two games, is Tim Duncan hasn't quite had his shot together. And that goes for the game they won and the game that they lost. It's not, you know, it's a numbers game. That's going to get better. That will get better. Tim Duncan is too good of a player to keep that, you know, slacking off, kind of dropping down a lot. So that will come back. Tony Parker, you're not going to keep that kind of intensity up. Obviously, Miami ran them out of the gym game two. That surprised me. I'm sure it surprised a lot of people. The fact, not that they won, because I think we all believe that Miami had to win that game if they were going to win the finals. Because if they go back to San Antonio down two games, they weren't coming back from that. Now, I like San Antonio for the simple fact of coaching-wise. Not saying Spoelstra is a bad coach. I think Popovich is a better coach. He's a smarter coach. He knows his team better. I think their strengths and how to get to them to make them play better. You know, I think it was in game one, there was that clip on the sideline where Popovich was telling his team, you know, we're going to miss shots. I get that. I'm okay with missing shots. It's about getting back in transition, because we all know that's where Miami excels in, is their transition game. Now, at the same time, San Antonio excels in the half-court offense. So basically, it's coming down to turnovers and whether or not Miami can get on a fast break. Now, the thing I noticed about game one was Miami shot at halftime 51% from the field, and they were only up, I think, by 2 points, and you're barely winning the game. I definitely think that with Miami shooting 51% at halftime, should have had a much bigger lead than they did. And I was watching game one. San Antonio was down, I think it was 4 or 6 points right around the fourth quarter. I looked over at my buddy. I said, I got this feeling San Antonio has Miami right where they want them. All San Antonio needs to do is stay within the game, and they finish it out in the fourth quarter, whereas I think Miami came back a lot better in game two and didn't kind of destroy themselves, you know, come out strong in the first half and kind of wear themselves out. I think they learned from that. And I have to give Miami props in game two, because I did not think LeBron getting 17, 18 points a game was going to win them anything. So I still like San Antonio in the series. I still think San Antonio will come out on top.
But isn't that because Dwayne Wade got involved early and started getting, I mean, he had 10 points going into halftime.
I think LeBron got everybody else involved early as opposed to in the first game. And again, like Yolo said over here, LeBron's defensive presence is very important, because Tony Parker was running in circles on that in game one. He shut him down in game two. He's going to have to continue to do that, shut down their hottest player. I don't care who it is. He's going to have to shut out their hottest player. Now, Danny Green was 5 for 5 from 3-point, and they weren't coming anywhere close.
Kill him.
They need to play as a team, as a whole, and they just weren't functioning all together in game two.
Champ?
Well, you can put my mic on.
Champ?
I'm going to stick with Heat and Six. They fell in the first game. But I chalked that up to the Spurs being rested. They had a long time before the final started after they swept Memphis, whereas the Heat played a grueling series against the Pacers. And I think the Heat just came out a little tired. I think they are going to take the series in six. You got to look at LeBron, and I like him where he does only score 20 or less points, because that means he is getting his teammates involved. I like Wade going to the rim, causing Duncan and all those other guys to foul him, getting early foul trouble, getting them off the court. I just think the Spurs are a little too old to keep up with the Heat in this series. Miami does like to run, and like Ricky said, you know, Popovich stressed getting back in transition. I think, you know, that's all well said and done when in a timeout, but when it comes to the game, can they do it? And can they keep that up over the course of the series? I don't think they can. I just think that, you know, as long as LeBron sticks to what he's doing now, where he's getting his teammates involved, those guys have to hit the shots when he finds the good pass like he does. That kid throws 100-mile-an-hour passes. I'm surprised that they hit the shots. Shit, my arms would be hurting, or my hands would be hurting having to catch that ball and shoot it right up. But you know what? As long as they hit their shots from the outside, but as long as those other, you know, the role players hitting their shots, Mike Miller, he's starting to come around shooting the three well. Bosch just needs to continue to try to get more rebounds, hit his six or seven shots he takes per game. And Wade, we all know he's hurt. We all know he's injured with the leg.
And you can tell. It's affecting
him. You can tell. But you know what? He's still playing the game hard, in my opinion. It shows a lot of heart and character for him to go to the rim and get banged around like he is, you know. And I don't think Ginobili's shooting well right now. I just think Duncan, being at his age, I don't think he can keep up.
Let me throw this back, okay? This is for Ryan and Brandon. I mean, you could chime in too, Ricky. Do you think, I'm going to start with Ryan, your mic's on this time. Do you think the Heat have the right lineup in? Should Bosch be in the starting lineup even?
I don't mind Bosch being in the lineup, but here's a question. What about Wade being the first off the bench? Will that work? Who knows? Spoelstra is, you know, he's dealt with this group for 2 years now. You know, and I think he's done an amazing job. Oh, I'm sorry, 3 years. He's done an amazing job. You know, that first year they fell. But hell, you know, look out in L.A. where they had all that talent and they couldn't manage it. Whereas Spoelstra is now the Lakers, I'm sorry.
Because they both kind of ended up the same way.
Right. But the Lakers had all that all-star power. You know what I'm saying? And they could not manage those guys. Whereas Spoelstra, he's managing these guys now. He knows best. So you know what? Whatever lineup he puts out there, it's going to work. And I think the Heat are going to take this in six.
No, I think he has the right lineup. Shane Battier, his struggles behind the arc have just been awful coming down the stretch. You know, they say let shooters shoot their way out of it, but sometimes you don't have time to let a shooter shoot his way out of it. Mike Miller has been shooting the ball really, really well behind the arc. And for some reason, I think Mike Miller brings this, like, this energy, almost like Chris Anderson. I mean, not as much because he's older. He's gone through injuries. He's a little long in the tooth, as they would say. But he brings like this energy that I feel like when Mike Miller's on the floor and he hits a three or hits a shot, the crowd's a little more excited. He's like a fan favorite down there. So I think that's really important to get Mike Miller, especially if he's shooting the ball well. And right now he's just shooting the lights out. As far as Chris Bosh goes, I think you have to start him. He's one of your quote-unquote big three. You're paying him a lot of money. He needs to come off. I mean, he needs to start. He just needs to hit his open shots and attack the glass. He can out-rebound a Tim Duncan.
You got anything to say on that, Ricky?
Yeah, as far as the most effective lineup for Miami, starting lineups mean nothing. It's all about matchups. So I think their most effective starting lineup, and I just jotted it down here, it would be Norris Cole, Ray Allen, LeBron James, Chris Anderson, Chris Bosh. The reason being is you have Chris Anderson on there to bring the intensity on the boards, which will allow Bosh the freedom to be able to, you know, make that 16, 15-foot jumper. But you would have Wade coming off the bench, Mike Miller, Batty 8, Anthony. Now, Wade, we obviously can see that his knees really bother him. He can't take a whole lot of jumpers. You know, he can get down there, you know, lay it up, you know, like Ryan said, draw the fouls. But with Miller and Battier and Joel Anthony, as far as your big guy, Wade can still go out there and kind of be that LeBron James general kind of guy while LeBron James is getting a little bit of rest. I think the backup lineup just has to maintain. They don't have to pull away necessarily, but if they can maintain that lead, now at the same time, they will be playing against San Antonio bench players. Or if they don't, if they're playing against San Antonio starters, you're still resting your own more effective starters, and you're getting the tired, weaker lineup for San Antonio.
Right on the field. That's what the New York Knicks did all year long. They bring in J.R. Smith off the bench when Carmelo sat down. That's why he played so well during the season. All right, you knuckleheads. That was another good round. And we are going to get into some Pac-12 football. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to head out to the Wild Wild West just after this.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. Now, I know you've heard me talk about the Touch Pro Basketball on my shows before. My boy, Tony Greer, is the inventor of the ball. Now, if you're out there training and playing basketball and you don't have this ball, you're missing out, because it's going to help you improve your hand-eye coordination, your dribbling, and your shooting skills. So go get the ball today at aragingbowl.com. Now, I'm sure a lot of you listeners are just like me. You like to spend a little time on the internet, sharing video, looking at video, but the problem is you can't stream live if you're playing on Tumblr or YouTube. Well, if you go right now to geezel.net, you can sign up for your free account and start streaming live and share that with all of your friends. That's geezel.net, geezl.net. And you're listening to the Triangle Offense on WCSB Sports. All right, welcome back. We're on the next topic. Last round, we're going to go ahead. I'm tallying it up right now. Last round, first place, Ricky Bobby. He said he was hungry. He was coming back. How'd it feel going out the first round?
It sucked. It was awful sauce.
You know.
So you agree that Spurs are going to go in five?
It's not as much as agreeing. It's just making a good point, I think.
No, Spurs are in seven. Spurs are in seven. I agree that.
Oh, yeah, you have Spurs in seven. My bad.
Spurs in seven. And I think he's the most right and made the most valid points with the right answer.
No, I got you.
That's bullshit.
He was in third the first round.
Bullshit.
Which effectively puts him in second right now.
Bullshit.
First round, Ryan Harris, the thing, won and finished in second the last round, so you're effectively in first place
well,
right now.
Well, fuck my life.
I like
I'm
it.
In third.
And I'm going to dominate this one too, bitch.
And you're only out by like an ass hair. That's
I have nothing to say to that. All right, let's shoot.
Get off my ass, bro.
All right, Pac-12 football is this week's conference that we are going to break down and get the predictions on. I'm starting with...
That's perfect. I was just thinking of an idea. This is off the air, obviously, but we're on the air technically. We should do the...
Noted.
The college football divisions and then go on right before the NFL starts. We did it.
Hell yeah. Well, that could have waited until after the show, yeah. But yeah, I got you.
Dog, it was in my head. I had to say it.
That's kind of why we
went
doing it so early.
I'm fucking sorry.
Doesn't he get docked a point or something for that?
That's an apology.
And the winner of the Captain Obvious Award of the Week goes to Brandon Beto.
It's about time I won something.
Soundbite.
No second base there. Okay. And the Pac-12 is this week's conference, so we're going to break down and get our predictions on. I'm going to start off with Ricky Bobby. Who do you have winning the Pac-12, and how do you see in that conference fizzle out?
I got the Bruins. No, I'm not talking about Stanley Cup. I'm talking about the Pac-12. I got UCLA. UCLA.
Nice.
Simple fact, Brett Hundley, quarterback, coming back. Dual threat. Pac-12 is an up-and-down-the-field type of division, so you need the offense. like the Oregons and the USCs of the Pac-12. You have to have a dual threat, definitely helps your offense. 3,700 total yards last year, 38 touchdowns. Pac-12 Player of the Year candidate early on. Defensively, they got Anthony Barr returning back, linebacker. He's kind of that defensive leader to kind of bring everybody together because, yeah, they lost a little in their secondary, but I think their front seven running the 3-4 defense is going to be a lot stronger than it was last year, putting that pass rush on the other offenses.
They did lose a key offensive lineman who ended up going first, or defensive lineman went first round, but I think Barr, I think that guy has a nose for the ball. He's like a Lavonte David type linebacker.
Well, I got it here. You know, a 6'4", 238 pounds. That's pretty beast, would you say, Yolo? Pretty beast?
Beast mode. Definitely beast mode.
All right, last year I had 82 tackles, 21 for a loss, 13 sacks, second best in the country, mind you, with the 13 sacks. And he had four forced fumbles. That's quite a tongue twister. Four forced fumbles. So that's a pretty solid centerpiece, a pretty solid heart for your defense.
You are killing the solid centerpiece and four forced fumbles.
Now, they only lost...
Unique New York.
The arsonist had oddly shaped feet. However, their receiving corps is well intact. They only lost one receiver from last year. Not a huge loss as far as everything goes there. Their top receiver, Shaq Evans, and Devin Lucian, was actually a starter as a freshman last year, but they lost him to a collarbone injury. If you can make a starting position on any D1 football team as a freshman, you're pretty talented. So him coming back from the injury last year, obviously we have to see how, but collarbone's not going to really be too effective as far as everything goes, unless he gets re-injured. And four of their five offensive linemen are returning as well. So as far as everything being intact, the key solid parts, the elements, I think UCLA can have a really strong under-the-radar run as far as winning the Pac-12 championship.
I think Ricky Bobby got his Tommy gun out here. Ryan Harris.
I'm going to go with Oregon as winning the Pac-12. Quack. All right. I love this conference because Saturday, after I get done watching all the games in the afternoon, the early afternoon, I can sit at home at 10 o'clock at night when all the kids are asleep, when the wife's asleep, and put on a Pac-12 game that just started and stay up till 2 a.m. to watch football. I love Oregon, all right? I love their fast-paced approach to offense. DeAnthony Thomas, who's their leading rusher coming back, is a beast and runs like Superman.
Beast mode.
This kid is so fast. Well, what did he say last week?
How fast is he?
You could probably, what was it, turn off the lights?
So fast, I turned off the light switch and was in the bed before the room was dark.
There it is.
Nice.
All right. Quote by Muhammad Ali, just
FYI.
It.
They have 9 starters coming back on offense, 7 on defense, from a team that went 12-1. Okay? Their quarterback, Marcus Mariota, threw for 2,677 yards, 32 touchdowns. He also added 752 yards on the ground with 5 more touchdowns. All right? This could be one of the best Oregon offenses yet, and that's saying something. All right, Chip Kelly's gone now. Where'd he go? Philadelphia. He rolled out to the NFL. All right, let's take a look at their schedule. There's only 2 teams on there that could derail this team from a 12-win season. I think that could be either Stanford or, like Ricky said, UCLA. All right, UCLA is being led by Jim Moore this year. The Pac-12 isn't really that good this coming up year. But with Stanford, that's a home game on a Thursday night. And scary things happen at Oregon on a Thursday night. Scary things. Night football is always the best. But home teams always win on Thursday night football, no matter if you're ranked 800th or 12th.
This year, I believe the Oregon-Stanford game, isn't it at Stanford?
No.
You sure about that? Because didn't they play at Oregon last year?
I'm positive.
All right, buddy.
He has a paper that says otherwise.
Now, UCLA, that's at home as well. So my 2 tough games that they have this year are at home. And I think that bodes well for Oregon.
So how do you see the conference stacking right now?
I think Stanford will come in second, but I think UCLA will be third. But I think Arizona State is going to be the dark horse in this conference. Their offensive line is fully returning. They
Oregon or ASU?
Arizona State.
Okay.
Their whole offensive line's coming back. But they do have a tough schedule. They have Wisconsin, Stanford, USC, and Notre Dame. Their quarterback returns, Taylor Kelly. He's a stud at quarterback. Their best pass rushers, Will Sutton and Carl Bradford, they're both coming back. They both finished last year with double-digit sacks. I think Arizona State will be a dark horse, although I think they're going to finish fourth. After that, it's a
crapshoot.
Independence
Bowl?
Colorado, Utah.
Yeah.
You know,
There's going to be a dark horse or two that pops up in this conference, like there is in every other conference.
But Oregon, I think, stands tall because of their record last year and the returning starters. I don't think they're going to miss a beat with their new coach. I think they're gonna walk all over everybody with the two toughest games at home, like I said.
YOLO?
All right. So I'm going to have to disagree with you on a little bit on losing your head coach. I think Chip Kelly's a mastermind offensively, and I think he did a lot of things with that team that aren't easy to do. But with that being said, you still have the talent at Oregon. You're still going to recruit because you're Oregon. You're still going to have the speed because you're Oregon. But with that being said,
your biggest booster is the owner of Nike kind of thing.
Exactly.
Stanford, I pick Stanford to win the Pac-12. Sophomore quarterback Kevin Hogan returns this year. He beat Oregon at Oregon last year, and so that tells you a little bit of how he handles the pressure. The big loss for Stanford this year was they lost their starting running back, who was a 1,000-yard runner three straight years, which was a huge loss. But with that being said, they have two seniors coming back that most likely will turn into a running back by committee. And on top of that, four of their five linemen return. And this is an offensive line that is widely associated to be the best in the nation. So they're going to continue that ground and pound, beat you up, pummel you offense. On top of that, what wins championships? We talk about it every single year when it comes down to here. What wins you a championship? Defense. Every year, defense is going to win you a championship.
Or scoring 70 points a game.
With that being said, this defense last year was number one nationally ranked in sacks. This defense gets after the quarterback. And we all know the Pac-12, it's that fast, it's speedy, it's spread. But this defense gets after the quarterback. Their front seven will feature three preseason first team all Pac-12 picks. Outside linebacker Trent Murphy, inside linebacker Shane Scoff, and defensive end Ben Gardner. These guys are relentless. They do not stop. They get after the quarterback every minute of every play. And on top of that, they have widely also considered the top safety duo in the country with Ed Reynolds and Jordan Richards. Ed Reynolds last year had six picks. Not only did he pick them off, he returned three of them for touchdowns. This defense will carry the Stanford team. And on top of the defense, you have the dual threat Kevin Hogan, who is returning for his junior year, who has confidence under his belt, and who will dominate the Pac-12 both with his legs and with his arms.
Who's your dark horse?
My dark horse is probably going to be, I don't want to say a dark horse, but if I had to pick another team, it would be UCLA. I think Jim Moore coming in and coaching their team, they're going to be NFL disciplined. I think they're going to have that discipline of not turning the ball over and of taking care of the ball. And I think in college, that is the hugest thing you can do is take care of the ball, because teams get in trouble. You know, all the upsets happen when a team doesn't take care of the ball.
Ricky, I didn't get your dark horse. Who you have as a dark horse?
But USC always seems to be there. At least if they don't make it to the end. But they always get right up there. I mean,
they do have to add on to that. They have their star wide receiver returning this year. And
he is Marquise
Lee returning this year. Marquise Lee.
The Lee.
But
it's just Lee, bro.
If I may add.
It's Marquise Lee.
Just to jump on top of the USC thing here, I don't think that they're even going to be – I think they're going to finish fifth, and the reason being is they have question marks at quarterback, the most important position.
They have question marks everywhere.
Right, but they don't have anybody to get the ball to their star receiver.
I agree.
Okay, right now they don't even have a starter named. They're going into fall camp without a starting quarterback named, whereas – you know, normally you have a quarterback named already, and he's going to have the majority of the snaps in fall camp. Now, without a quarterback named, those two, three top guys are going to have to split reps.
Well, that's why it's a dark horse, though. You never know what's going to happen with the question mark.
But Lane Kiffin is the wild card here. I think he's garbage.
He sucks. I agree with that.
All right, that's going to wrap up that round. I got UCLA winning the conference, followed by Stanford, Oregon, Arizona.
Not Arizona State, just Arizona.
Arizona, the Wildcats.
The Wildcats, got you.
Wildcats, Sun Devils for Kane.
Then USC, then Arizona State, then Washington State. There you go.
Thank you for the rundown, sir.
And Colorado, I didn't mention because they suck and they're not going anywhere.
Take it to the bank.
When they get Cordell Stewart back, then they'll be relevant again.
We could say the top three, though, for the most part, is going to be Oregon, UCLA, Stanford.
Yeah.
Correct?
Or UCLA and whoever else you want to mention.
Okay. USC's not going to be in the top.
I agree.
No, I agree with that, too. That was a good dark horse pick. I'm going to tally up the scores for this round, and then we're going to eliminate somebody. Did the champ have enough not to finish in last place, and did Brandon do enough to get into first place to not get eliminated? We'll find out right after this.
What is this, 24?
Sports radio host, producer, news anchor. A few of many, many more careers that the Connecticut School of Broadcasting can lead you to. Go CSB.com or 1-800-TV-RADIO to schedule your studio tour. With an on-hands approach and instructors being broadcast professionals themselves, you're guaranteed to get a first-class learning experience. Get your career in the broadcasting field started the right way. Sports radio host, producer, news anchor, the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. Go CSB.com or 1-800-TV-RADIO to schedule your studio tour.
All right, forget about the NBA Finals. We got the Triangle Offense Finals. We have Ryan Harris defending his championship, making it back to the championship round this week, and Ricky Bobby trying to get his title back. After, I don't know if you mind me telling this, you felt like you were a little gamed last week, right?
Yeah, a little bit. I felt like I was a little job, but I'm back. Let's do this.
All right. Well, as I can't say I'm the most fair and just commissioner in all the land because somebody else has that title, but I'm almost there. You know, pretty close. All right. Here's how we're going to lay this out. So, the final topic. If we start the drum roll, please. Lord Stanley's Cup. All right, now this is how this little shindig's going to go down. We're going to start out with you, Ricky Bobby. You're the challenger. And then we're going to go to Ryan Harris, the champion, for at least the rest of this round. And may the best man win.
I think the key word here is for Boston is physical. Boston, they proved me wrong the last round against Pittsburgh Penguins. Pittsburgh had the highest scoring offense in the league this year and in the playoffs. They were averaging 3.27 goals a game. That's after they were getting blown out those four games against Boston. I think they only put up two goals. Now, the line of Lucic, Krejci, and Horton are the leading plus-minus line leader in the NHL playoffs. All three of them lead in that category. They all are in the top five there. Now, when you're talking about the goaltending, you have Rask with a 94.3% save percentage. Crawford, 93.5 save percentage. Fairly even. The reason why I give the advantage to Boston is because of Rask just completely dominating and making Pittsburgh's offense look silly. When you're talking about the line of Kunitz and Crosby, and then you got Malkin and Iginla.
Tell me about Jágr.
Thank you. Leading into Jágr, being the veteran presence, I think he was a huge help, and that's why they didn't miss the whole Iginla trade. They already had that veteran presence. They just didn't know it at the time. And Jágr steps up in the playoffs. He's been there before. He knows how to get these things done. He counter what Chicago has to offer as far as in Marian Hossa and their veteran presence, who's gone on. You know, he's played for Pittsburgh. He's played for Detroit. And now playing for Chicago again. But, again, I think being physical with Chicago, and it's proven with Pittsburgh and throughout the playoffs for Boston, is they get the other team frustrated. They draw in penalty minutes. Now, as far as teams against them, their penalty minutes for the other team is 182 minutes against them. Now, Chicago draws in 146. You break that down, that's 36 minutes. That's 18 power plays. That's 18 times you have a man advantage. That's a lot. Now, I have had their power play here. I guess that went away. Anyway,
don't worry, I'll cover it.
But you have... You would have it. I had it written down here. But it wasn't that far off. They were pretty close. Anyway...
We'll find out.
Going off of that Jágr veteran presence, they got Brad Marchand and they got Patrice Bergeron as far as their, you know, veteran presence. And keeping everybody together. Then you got defense. You got Daniel Chara, and you got Boychuk. Boychuk is the underrated. Nobody talks about that much, but he plays a lot with Chara, and he kind of is the guy that's going to go get the puck behind the net or go and get the puck. Chara's there. If you come in trying to get the puck, he's just going to run your ass over. He's just going to plow you over. 6'9", gargantuan, I believe I named him in my blog. So I think this all comes down for Boston. It comes down to physicality because goaltending, the way I see it, Boston had the edge because of their dominance against the number one seed, Pittsburgh Penguins.
Okay, you guys know these teams inside and out, but where do you think they're going to finish? How many games?
5.
Wow. That's ballsy. Very ballsy.
Do you want me to be stereotypical? I like the Boston Bruins in 6. No, I got Boston at 5. Oh, don't tell me you had Boston
at 6. I thought
he
just said 4.
No, I did say 5.
Look, I'm going with the Bruins as well. All right,
we established that.
We at least... Can I finish my point, sir? Can I please finish my point, baby? All right, check it out. Look, they both can score. They both can play strong defense. They both they have the best two goalies to statistically in the playoffs. All right, they're both going to play physical. They didn't get to the finals without playing physical. All right, but let's take a look at the matchups. As teams, head-to-head, the Bruins or Blackhawks did not play this season because of the shortened season. All right, the last time they played was October 15th, 2011, where the Bruins won 3-2 in a shootout. So it doesn't make a difference what we're talking about now, but that's the last time they played. They never met in the Stanley Cup Finals, which is surprising to me.
All right, Ryan, sexy this thing up for me. Tell me something a little bit more in depth. What do you think about their forwards?
You have Krejci. He's leading the NHL in postseason points with 21 goals. I'm sorry, 21 points, and he has 9 goals, all right? Horton, he lit the lamp 7 times. He's got 17 points. Lucci, he's got 13 points with 3 goals and 10 assists. All right, them forwards are playing in, like Brandon likes to say, beast mode. All right, the Blackhawks, Hossa, Sharp, Kane, or Patrick, what is it, Kane, Kanye?
Patrick Kane.
Yeah, Kane. All have 14 points with Sharp right behind Krejci in the playoff goal race with 8. All right, keep an eye on Bickle. He has 8 goals right now. He's making a name for himself in his playoffs, in these playoffs this year. So for the forwards, I have that matchup even. They have so much skill up front, both teams do. I think the only difference is might be the Blackhawks are faster, but the Bruins are a lot more physical right now. As for the defense on the Bruins side, they're limiting opponents to a league-best 1.88 goals per game. Chara, he has 11 points as far as a defenseman. The Bruins defensemen have provided a strong transition game and helped out that offense. They have 35 points entering the finals right now. For the Blackhawks, their defense, 26 points thus far. They've helped out limiting opponents to 1.94 goals per game with, another phenomenal stat. But I give that edge to the Bruins, only by a slight margin.
All right, you're going to need to wrap it up here.
Good gosh. Let me get to the point where Ricky couldn't make it,
Thank you.
And due to time constraints, we had to move forward in our programming. Thank you for tuning in.
Good gosh.
I was waiting for you to say something besides what you said.
All right. Power play.
Finally, somebody
brings
it up.
The Bruins enter the series with the 10th best power play. But they did not get a power play goal at all in the Eastern Conference Final. All right. The Blackhawks power play hasn't been special either. They haven't been. They've gone 7-for-51 in the playoffs. Terrible.
Terrible. The word's terrible.
Terrible. But it's not going to be one on power play. It's going to be one on 5-on-5 play, I believe, in this series. But the penalty kill, the Bruins shutting down teams, or they shut down the Penguins 0-for-15. Penguins came into that series an amazing offensive scoring team. I believe that,
All right, you guys bring up a lot of statistics, a lot of names, some really good points, but I'm going to tally up the points here and see what I can do to see if I can salvage a winner this week. It is so close. It's going to be tough with all those statistics and names and I can do this here. So I'm going to confer for a minute here. I'm going to take a real quick break, and I'll be right back with your winner right after this. Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. Now, I know you've heard me talk about the Touch Pro Basketball on my shows before. My boy, Tony Greer, is the inventor of the ball. Now, if you're out there training and playing basketball and you don't have this ball, you're missing out because it's going to help you improve your hand-eye coordination, your dribbling, and your shooting skills. So go get the ball today at aragingbowl.com. Now, I'm sure a lot of you listeners are just like me. You like to spend a little time on the internet, sharing video, looking at video, but the problem is you can't stream live if you're playing on Tumblr or YouTube. Well, if you go right now to Giesel.net, you can sign up for your free account and start streaming live and share that with all of your friends. That's Giesel.net, GEALZ.net. All right, we're back here on the Triangle Offense. Wow, that last round for the championship, for the belt, for the title, for all the marbles, the gazoos, the gazas, and everything in between was a bit rough. And I think I will be able to determine that, given the information, the knowledge, the statistics that you fellas dropped on me here today, I have a winner. And that winner is Ricky Bobby getting the championship belt back, taking down Ryan the Kane Harris. It was a close. This was a split decision. Right almost down the middle. Ricky won 50.51% to 49.49%. That was the smallest margin of victory in the history of the Triangle Offense. And Brandon's going to come back next week and try to finish second again. So be sure to listen in next week, same time, same channel, right here on MRN Broadcasting, WCSB Sports, here on blogtalkradio.com. And be sure to tune in on Tuesday for my show, The Cold Hard Truth on Sports. It'll be an eventful evening as well. So to all of you and yours, be sure to share tonight's show with all of your friends and listen into the other programming on MRN Broadcasting. Until next week, we're out.